Indigenous films made by the kinds of people films are usually made about. It focuses on Native people, who are often not part of mainstream society, who aren't necessarily represented by governments. And most of all, Indigenous films about and is made by people who've not had control over how they're represented to the rest of the world. Indigenous filmmaking started around 1980 when portable video became readily available. A Brazilian named Vincent Carelli had been working in remote Indian villages in the Amazon basin. He was sick of seeing outsiders arrive at those villages and essentially steal images of the Indians to show around the world with their interpretations of what those images meant. So Carelli introduced video to a few villages, helped the people make films about themselves, and encouraged them to introduce video to others. In that way, Carelli thought Brazilian Indians could present accurate pictures of who they are, and in the case of Brazil, perhaps convince non-Indian Brazilians that they existed and had the right to live. Indigenous film projects grew up around the globe. One group in the Inuit town of Iglulik in northern Canada eventually produced The Fast Runner, an exquisite film that won a major prize at the Cannes Film Festival and was seen around the world. Indigenous films don't look like films that play in commercial theaters. They use no movie stars. In style and technique, they're often plain spoken. They confront questions connected to the survival of their own cultures. Cry Rock is one of the short films in the Indigenous Film and Arts Festival. It's made by Bianchi Hanus, a young woman of the Nushalk tribe of Bella Coola in British Columbia, and it's about the common problem of vanishing culture. The film caresses the mountains and streams of the tribal landscape. Periodic scenes of the filmmaker's grandmother as she slices fresh salmon and hangs the strips to smoke are the glue that holds the film together and also illustrates the central problem. As the elders die off, fewer members of the tribe either speak the language or know the stories that bind this small culture together. The young director's dilemma is that filming the grandmother telling stories may violate the sanctity of those stories. The film ends with a simple image of the insoluble conflict between old and new. After preparing the salmon in a traditional way, the grandmother stuffs small portions in plastic bags for the freezer. Is that good enough? How does one know? Little Thunder by Canadian filmmakers Nance Ackerman and Alan Sillaboy is inspired by the Mi'kmaq legend of the stone canoe, as well as Mi'kmaq petroglyphs in the Maritime Provinces. It's an elegant 3-minute animation about a boy growing up that begins in a colorful sea and ends in the stars. Three figures are in a canoe, a bear person, a mask, and a human-like figure. They lasso a fast-running human who pulls the canoe across a multicolored landscape in a magnificent visual poem. We Still Live Here by the non-Indigenous filmmaker Anne Makepeace opens on Jessie Littledoe Baird, a Wampanoag woman driving on Cape Cod. She describes her sudden realization that all the place names, Sagamore, Sipawisset, Mashpee, Shawmut, Chappaquiddick, are Wampanoag words, yet none of the living Wampanoag people spoke the language. Baird got herself to MIT, studied linguistics, learned, among other things, that the first Bible published in the New World was written in Wampanoag, and she has now set up a project to revive the language. Her daughter is the first native speaker of Wampanoag in generations. What you learn from We Still Live Here makes your jaw drop. It's a thrilling film. I'm Howie Mofshevitz.